I'm Divya Shekhar, and this is From the Bookshelves of Forbes India. There's a phrase that often gets associated with leadership, or rather, a good leader. And I've been hearing this since I started as a journalist over 10 years ago. Of course, the phrase itself is much older than that. And the phrase is leading from the front. It refers to taking the lead in making decisions and showing people the way. But our guest on today's episode comes from a different school of thought. He's of the belief that business leaders should no longer aspire to lead from the front, but instead aim to lead from the back. Why does he say that? What does he mean? And is this something organizations will even be open to implementing? Let's find out. Join me in welcoming Mr. Ravi Kant to this episode. He is the former CEO and Vice Chairman of Tata Motors. His new book, Leading from the Back to Achieve the Impossible, is co-authored with best-selling writers Harry Paul and Ross Reck.
Can you sort of start, tell us what leading from the back means? Because, you know, we've heard of leading from the front. That's the phrase that's most generally used. What's leading from the back?
Well, I think it's a good opening question, I would say. So let's look at what does leading mean. You know, leadership is, I would say, two aspects to leadership. One is it is important for any organization, any corporate. And number two, it is contextual. So having said that, let's go back to leading from the front. How did it start? So leading from the front actually started from the military. 2,500 years ago, or even earlier. So we have heard of Alexander, we have heard of Ashoka, his grandfather, Chandragupta Maurya, everybody. See, at that point in time, because they were only either you are fighting on foot or on cavalry on the horses, and therefore you had, it was kind of hand-to-hand battle, or you had equipment which could go only a few meters. And therefore, it was necessary to be in the front, for the leader to be in the front and show to the troops his or her face and be there. So leading from the front was a natural corollary of that context at that point in time. But things have begun to change, and things have changed a lot, especially after the Industrial Revolution. Because after the Industrial Revolution, say 200-300 years ago, since then, you have been getting things which could be mass manufactured. You could send things which are much faster, much longer periods and things like that. And many other things have changed. And therefore, it is no more a relevant kind of thing, and the whole thing changes. Also, at the same time, we have now got, in the recent decades, I would say, it has changed further, even further. Because there are now the unpredictability and uncertainty of events has kind of black swan events have become a regular events these days. They are no more black swan. So many things keep happening. Then we are flooded with tsunami of information. In fact, if I was just quote Professor Kurzweil of MIT, he had said some time ago that a century of progress can be contained at today's rate of progress in a month's time.
Right.
Now you understand this, how the collapse and condensation has been there. And therefore, maybe in a few years' time, it could be in a week's time. And then maybe in decades' time, it could be in one day's time. So that is the kind of information. And therefore, it's brought a lot of complexity. It is impossible for anybody to lead from the front. And therefore, we need to look for a separate, different alternative. Corporates are only 200-300 years old after the Industrial Revolution, because then when the mass manufacturing came, then only the need for an organization, need for a leadership kind of thing, organized leadership came into being. And because military was the closest, they took a lot of things from their hierarchical organization, leading from the front, all these aspects came from military. But even here, things have changed. The military has already changed. Now it is for corporate leadership to see how it is going to change. And I think that's where I come in. I believe that, and I feel quite strongly and passionately, that the days for leading from the front are over. There is one more thing. The new generation, not so much even millennium is quite this thing, but Generation Z is really, they don't want this kind of leading from the front of leadership, because it is that leading from the front is, you know, it comes with a territory, so to say. It is very, people are egocentric, pompous, they know everything. It's either my way or highway kind of leadership. So younger people don't want that kind of leadership. They want that they should be given an opportunity, they should be given freedom, they should be given a space to do their own things and to contribute to the organization. So that's why I feel this is something which a new type of leadership is now called for.
Right. So can you describe what leading from the back is like? Like, what are the essential qualities in a leader that one can qualify it as leading from the back?
Yeah, thank you. So leading from the, you know, I have had, which I'll come to later, I've had over 5 decades of experience in various companies, say Titan Watches is there, LML Vespa, Philips, and then Tata Motors, where I spent, nearly 15 years, finally as managing director and vice chairman of the company. So I have passed through and experienced many, many things. And therefore, what I've tried to do is to crystallize all this into a few lessons as to what does it mean? I mean, to me also, what does it mean? And therefore, there I put it in a very kind of a simple form, that it consists of 3 parts. And one part is, how do I change myself? How do I deal with myself? Because first is the person himself. Unless the person changes, nothing will happen. Then how do I deal with the team? And then last is, how do I deal with the task? Right. And in each, there are 3 points to keep it simple. In the first one is, How do I change myself? First is to have an open mind. Now, this is easier said than done, as you know. And the more successful you are, more close-minded you become. And that is why it is how to have an open mind, because so many things are changing. You must be aware of things that are changing outside. And one person cannot do it. And therefore, you need to have a lot of antennas, you understand? So, which will absorb all this thing. And then we can all collectively look at. Second point in this is assume ownership. Even though you may not be financial owner of a company, you must assume that you own. That means you have that kind of, I would say, mentality. Mentality to, as if you own the thing. Yeah. When you own the thing, you bring a different perspective to the entire thing. And third is, be detached. While you assume ownership, you also be detached, in the sense that it should not be that, okay, I'm doing it for certain for this thing, to get money or get this thing. I'm doing it for the goodwill of the organization. Right. Second is about how should I deal with the team. Now, trust. First is the trust. Trust is the, you can say, the lubricant for everything. If you don't have trust, you can't have leadership. Especially you can't have leadership where it is a collective leadership, it is a distributed leadership, because there must be a huge amount of trust both vertically and horizontally, all across 360 degrees. And trust is a key factor. Right. Then trust, if you have trust, then brings collaboration. So collaboration, as you know, nobody can do one thing by themselves or himself or herself. So you need collaboration. But trust is what will generate collaboration. And after that, what you have is leverage strengths. Collaboration can be strong, very, very strong, only if you recognize the strengths of the people and leverage that strength, rather than, as the norm is, you start looking at people's weaknesses and start taking action on people's weaknesses. Oh, aisa nahi hai, aisa nahi hai, you know, that kind of thing is there. So look at people's strengths, leverage their strength, And when you can understand, when you all put it together in a collaborative form and a trusted form, it becomes a very powerful machine, very, very powerful machine. And therefore, you can do lot many more things which you can't even imagine that you could do it. So that's what it is. And third part is, now that you have done this, how do you deal with the task? Because at the end of the day, leadership, or any leadership, is therefore doing a task for a purpose. So in that, again, I've got three things. Mm. One is called testing the limits. Look big, mm. Think big. And don't look at where you are. Look at what the opportunity could be. And then work backwards from the opportunity. Last in this is be tough softly. Mm. Many times people, if you say leading from the back, people say, oh, that means it's a soft kind of approach and what can be done. And no, that means you are not tough. So I am saying that as far as the realization of target is concerned, objective is concerned, be very tough. Be mm. very, very tough. So there is no giving way as far as that is concerned. Right. However, as far as the human beings are concerned, those who are involved in doing, you must be humane, you must be soft, you must understand. Mm. Because you know, each person goes through different type of times. And sometimes, you know, something has not been done and you are then shouting at that person, not understanding that maybe he has some very massive personal problem.
You said that, you know, while leaders should be aggressive and very strict about their targets, you know, and tasks that need to be completed, they also need to be humane and they also need to make sure that, you know, their team members can take ownership of their work. So how can leaders strike that balance between, say, being strict and, you know, driving targets and providing guidance and at the same time allowing their team members to take ownership, giving them the space, having that sense of trust, etc.?
You know, Divya, this is a bit of a difficult thing, and more, but it is on a long-term basis is a more sustainable thing. Mm. And all I can say that I have practiced this for more than 50 years. And once you kind of have this attitude, have this thing, then it begins to work by itself. I mean, people understand. I mean, how do you create trust? You create trust by being transparent. You create trust by being equitable, fair. You create trust by looking at everybody's strength and doing things in a decent manner. Mm. So, through that, over a period of time, then people begin to understand, okay, you are that kind of person. And mm. therefore, so trust is not one-way thing. Trust is a two-way thing. Mm. And so when you begin to behave in certain manner, you also, I would say majority of people begin to give it back to you, the trust give it back to you. And then mm. they become more open, then more this thing. Once people become more open, then you begin to understand their situation, their this thing. And therefore, you get kind of early warning signals, I can say. You can get much faster here than if you were to have a rigid kind of organization where things will come only after the event has occurred or at the 11th hour it will. Here you are able to catch the problem, so to say, or the challenges much early in the game. And therefore, you have an opportunity to correct it. That's all I'm saying.
Hmm. Right. You know, Mr. Ravikant, you've played a crucial role in turning around Tata Motors and making it into a global player in the automotive industry. You know, under your leadership, the company sort of experienced a remarkable transformation, expanded in market share, achieving profitability, etc. And you were also instrumental in the development and the launch of the Tata Nano, which was the world's most affordable car. How did you sort of come across the concept of leading from the back? Was it something that you experienced early on in your career, or was it much later?
No. This kind of thing, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think a lot of other people, you know, it is experiential. It depends mm-hmm. on what kind of experience you had when you grew up with your parents, kind of parents you had, the kind of family you had, the kind of school you went to, the kind of exposure. It's a question of exposure. What kind of exposure? It so happened that I had this kind of exposure all along, and therefore I started building that. And part of my DNA may have been that, I would say. And therefore, you have been following this and you have resisted yourself from following the other type. Let me put it this way. And I have worked in 7 companies and 7 industries, in fact.
Mm. Yeah.
In each company that I went, I did not know anything about that industry.
Right.
That's quite a remarkable thing. Mm. But I did not go with so-called my loyal group of people. I went alone.
Mm.
Why did I go alone? I went alone to tell people that, look, I trust you. If I had gone with people, other people, then a signal I'm giving is I don't trust you people.
Mm.
Now I've come with my own ideas. So it takes time. But once people begin to understand, they give you, I can tell you, Divya, that they give you, if normally they would give 60% of their abilities and outputs, they start giving you 120% of this thing. I mean, that is the big difference. That is the huge difference. It makes for a substantial leap. It's not an incremental change. Then they are in a mission mode. You know, they are like, ye toh karna hi hai, ye toh karna hi hai. You know, it's that kind of attitude. So it is something which I have done. And I feel that it is workable. I've seen it in many circumstances. I've seen it as a startup in Titan Watches, in a mature company like Tata Motors. I've seen it, you talked about Nano, you talked about Ace is there, again, creating new markets. I have substantial market share increase like in Philips, or turnarounds like LML or Tata Motors, or even going out and creating a very, very large footprints overseas, like Daewoo in South Korea and Jaguar Land Rover in the UK.
Yes.
So in all circumstances, I have kind of lived that role. Let me put it this way.
Mm.
And I'm quite happy and satisfied.
Right.
And therefore, I feel this is also a way of doing things. And when I start looking at it, I'm finding that I'm not an exception. There are a lot of other people who are beginning to think like that, who are doing it. And who are, so it is, in a way, it is catching up. And the question is now how to accelerate it.
Recently, Infosys co-founder N.R. Narayan Murthy said that youngsters should ideally work 70 hours a week in India. Does that align with principles of leading from the back?
Well, I would not entirely agree with that in a technical sense. Let me put it this way: how do you define work? Means when I'm doing things for the company, I'm in the office or at home. So I am saying ki divorce the hours with being associated with the company.
Mm.
I mean, I have thought of company 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean. So I don't want to put a rigid thing whether 70 hours or 77 hours. I don't want to put any rigid kind of thing. But I think what we should all have is a kind of a constant thought about doing well for the organization, the interests of the organization, what we can do. And, you know, that's again coming back from that assuming ownership kind of thing. If we assume ownership, we find this is part of my family, this is part of me, and therefore I should go beyond the normal call of duty to do something. It is in that context, whether 70 hours or 700 hours, that's immaterial to me. But you should be always thinking of that and do best. So I wouldn't put any kind of a physical restriction of hours, but. Mm. Let people start thinking. So nothing is forced into people.
Mm-hmm.
People give of themselves to the company of their own volition rather than forced upon to give.
Right. You know, so these days when people, you mentioned how the business ecosystem is changing, the way people work is constantly changing. People switch jobs every other year. So in such a scenario, unlike, say, the steady old days of corporate where people used to spend years or even decades working for the same company. So it was like, okay, this is my company. I have a sense of ownership, you know, in this. This is my, I need to do well. Versus in a scenario where people are jumping jobs every few years, how do you develop a strong sense of ownership from the get-go? And do leaders have a role to play?
Yeah. So let's look from the other side of the lens. Why are people leaving? Why do people leave?
Okay.
I mean, let's go to the root of the problem
and
not look at it in a transactional manner. Because if you look at the transactional manner, we will never come to the right solution, in my view. So look at the root of the problem. Why are they leaving? What is the key thing that is propelling them to? Of course, money and all that is important. But more important is job satisfaction. Is the freedom to do things, to be able to feel that I'm useful to the company.
Right.
If a company is going to treat me like a mechanical piece of equipment or something, naturally, I will not feel bad. And today's people are very vocal and they take action. They don't have the sense of insecurity that, say, my generation had, where, you know, you needed to have a sense of security. And for that, you also, that led to your being in the company and that led to company being a long-term employer. But today, that is not there. I mean, it's not that you're going to go hungry or you don't have a piece of roof over your head or you don't have a piece of clothing. All those things are now gone. And therefore, you're looking for a higher order of things. How do I feel satisfied? How do I feel happy? How do I this thing? I have a family to run also. I have a family to look at this. So I think the corporates need to understand this, that you are not dealing with different kind of people. Your context of the people has changed. And therefore, what kind of organization you should have to suit the thing. So we are looking from this thing, you know, I have an organization, people should conform to that. I'm seeing that is changing. Today, the thing is, the organizations must look at what kind of people they want to have and therefore create an environment for those kind of people. Right. If they don't do it, they won't get such people, period.
Right. And on that note, I would like to conclude this podcast. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Ravikant. It will be interesting to see how the principles of leading from the back will play out with India Inc. going forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Divya, for giving me the opportunity.
And thank you to all our listeners for being with us till the end of this conversation. That was Mr. Ravikant, former CEO and Vice Chairman of Tata Motors, and we discussed his book, Leading from the Back to Achieve the Impossible. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I am Divya Shekhar. See you next time.